Morning. You're right. I hope you are. Genuinely. Fighting fit, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, rocking and raring for the day ahead. I am joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you, good sir?
Morning. Morning. Yeah, I'm good.
Good, good. It has just ticked past 8 in the AM, Greenwich Mean Time. On Wednesday, the 18th of February, in the year of our Lord 2026, you are the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers. Let's see what's in the news today, shall we? Shall we see what the corporate mainstream media is banging on about? What that cabal of evil editors on Fleet Street trying to pretend is important to you? Let's just get straight into it then. So, we've got pressure piles on Andrew. So, it's another Andrew day. Not wall to wall, but nearly. Once again, no real talk of the Israeli intelligence connections to Epstein, just that Andrew might have used prostitutes. Okay, pressure piles on Andrew and Jesse Jackson dies at 84. Jesse Jackson. We'll get to that. All right, the Eye paper. Third police force examines Andrew's links to Epstein as PMs threaten inquiry. Another paper further down, I think it's the next one, even says it's like 11 police forces. But anyway, let's read the little blurb on iPaper, because the little blurb on the iPaper is usually, for the British print media, usually isn't too bad. It's usually fairly reasonable, fairly even-handed, usually. All right, let's read it. So it says, just straight up facts, usually, you know. Essex police assessing flight logs. It's very small for me. And emails for Epstein's Lolita Express at Stansted Airport. That's in Essex, isn't it, Stansted? Anyway. Private terminal. Amid allegations that women were flown in and out of the country, cross-party MPs consider whether to open an investigation into Andrew's work as a UK trade envoy. I thought they were just doing it. I thought that was decided already. Okay. After documents in the Epstein files appear to show him sharing confidential reports. It doesn't appear to, it does. It does show it. Whether that's true or not, but don't say it appears to, it does. It's weird when they say that, don't they? Like, even the BBC reporting on their own Panorama show about lying about Trump on January the 6th, for example. A Panorama, it appears to show this edit. No, it just does. It just does. Why are you saying that? All right. Mountbatten Windsor, i.e. Andrew, Saxe Coburg and Gotha, could be hauled in front of MPs for a grilling over his relationship with the paedophile billionaire, as committee chair Liam Brynne warns nothing is off the table. It's like when the Pentagon are asked, will they drop a nuclear bomb on someone, nuclear bomb on someone? They always say, nothing's off the table, nothing's off the table. Okay, Liam Brynne. All right. So, Andrew's still in hot water, and I think the investigations on him from multiple angles are going to just keep going. So, as I understand it, at this moment in time, as at recording, the morning of the 18th of Feb, 26, he still maintains he hasn't done anything wrong. He's never met Virginia Guffrey. Let alone the dozens, hundreds, maybe thousands, is it, of other women? Who knows? Some accounts say he just had all different women all the time over many, 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 many years. So it'd probably be hundreds, maybe in the low thousands. God knows. Who knows? He doesn't make, he maintains that he hasn't done anything wrong, that there's nothing to that. That's not true or that's not real. Or he's just silent on it, isn't it? Emily Maitlis didn't ask him much about all those women in his car crash interview. And since then, it's just zip, there's nothing. So, will he ever be forced to? I wonder if Andrew will be ever forced, one way or another, in public, like in the dock, to answer questions about everything, about how he conducted most of his adult life, basically. And even if he did, would he do that thing of, I just don't remember? Like, did you have this Russian stripper come and stay in Buckingham Palace on this date that's very well documented? Like, you definitely did. Did you? And he's just like, I don't recall. It's not funny, really, is it? Well, it kind of is. I mean, not exactly barrel laugh funny, but it's. It's hubris. He was a man who thought he could do anything and get away with it endlessly. Okay, the Sun. What is that? Emily Atack is still not as fat as she used to be. That's news. All right. Pressure ramps up on Andrew. See, it's an Andrew day. They've decided. They got together. I don't know if they're in a little WhatsApp or Telegram messaging thing or whatever. Or they're all boomers. It's probably Facebook. Tomorrow, guys, let's all go with Andrew again. The cabal of Fleet Street editors I'm talking about. Hey, guys. Let's all go with Andrew again tomorrow, right? Make sure you don't say anything about Ehud Barak, right? Or Larry Summers. Don't mention Sergey Brin, guys. Yeah, guys. Alright. 7 UK forces on Epstein case. 7. Lolita flight logs checked. Cops in Andy sex probe. Why do they write like that? Cops in Andy sex probe. What terrible. Why do they do it? It's only a convention they made up, right? To write like that. To write in that sort of, with that sort of cadence, that sort of use of English. Cops in Andy sex probe. Get just, ugh. Gross. Alright, the Daily Mail. Pretending it's trying desperately pretend it's not complete slop. The Mail Group, fifth columnist essentially, trying to hide it behind a tiny bit of red meat from time to time. Pressure piles on Andrew as fourth police force probes Epstein claims. Essex officers to examine whether paedophile traffic women on private jet into Stansted. Something about Gordon Ramsay there. I don't like Gordon Ramsay. I don't hate his guts, but quite a lot of people like him, think he's good, he's interesting, he's cool. I don't like him. I think he's a bully. Like, if he tried to shout at me in my face, I'd just be in a fight with him. Like, he just shouts in people's faces sometimes. You want to sort it out, mate. There was one time he was in a charity football match. He was good at football. As a young man, I think he could have gone pro, maybe. He was good at football. And anyway, often there's like charity matches, aren't there, where there's like a mixture of celebrities and ex-football players. And Teddy Sheringham broke his leg. It was brilliant. Teddy Sheringham just clatters into him and fractures his leg. Lovely. Good old Teddy Sheringham. All right, The Guardian. Ugh. The Guardian. Ugh. Early for it, isn't it? The Guardian. Oh, look, there's disgusting Jesse Jackson there. He has died at age 84, finally. 1 in 9 new homes built in areas of flood risk. Yeah, not a great idea, is it? Although most of Britain is at flood risk. Well, not most, but big, big, big chunks of Britain are at risk of being flooded if it rains too much, right? So, but I've always thought that it's easy to say, isn't it, when it doesn't really affect you. If you don't live near a volcano or in the middle of Tornado Alley or on a floodplain, it's easy to go, don't live there then, don't build a house there then. Because I've never lived in those places. So I've always been, why did you buy a house? Why did you build a house on the slopes of a volcano or on a floodplain in the middle of where tornadoes go every single year? Don't live there, don't do that. It's easier said than done though, isn't it? I mean, this is actually an attempt at sympathy for those people. It's easier said than done to just say that, isn't it? What if you're financially tied there, friends and family, all sorts of things? I mean, living on the slopes of a volcano is... I actually maintain that. Just don't live there. Move. Move. But no, other places. Yeah, it's bad anyway. All right, Jesse Jackson. The Reverend Jesse Jackson. Not a fan myself. Personally, shouldn't speak ill of the dead, but I'm going to. I don't care. If it's good enough for Christopher Hitchens, it's good enough for me. The amount of fawning that's gone on over him over the last day or whatever since he passed away. It was the greatest thing ever, obviously from the lefty, globalist, anti-white mainstream media. It's one of the greatest things ever. Like, he was the heir to Martin Luther King. Don't worry about any of the crimes or misdemeanors of Martin Luther King. Let's not talk about those. But Jesse Jackson was his heir. He was He was just great. He was just a brilliant, brilliant person on every single level. Didn't do anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with his worldview. I just don't agree with any of that. I think he was a pretty terrible person, to be quite honest. I think he was a champion of grievance politics. I think he was a champion of race division. I think he was, and occasionally would couch it in the terminology of love and togetherness. I think he was a champion of dividing America. I think he was consumed by racism, anti-white racism. I think he loathed white people. The whole BLM thing, for example, of course he was a champion of that. You get the idea. See, the thing is, in the early days, back in the very, very early days, before the civil rights legislation, okay, you got a point. You got a point that America isn't fair, right? But LBJ did all of that. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, whether LBJ's civil rights legislation was even a good thing, ultimately. Okay. LBJ does the civil rights legislation in the 60s, right? So at that point, after that, which is the vast majority of Jesse Jackson's life and career, you know, he's trying to run for president probably at the height of his fame and powers in the 80s, in the mid and late 80s. So anything after the LBJ civil rights legislation, it's just grifting, as far as I'm concerned. It's just that the politics of victimhood, an endless victimhood. And it's terrible. That's where we are today, right? The net result of all of that is something like, do you remember this incident during the BLM stuff? Not to mention all the cities that were burnt down because some random black guy took a fentanyl overdose. But do you remember this incident? Couple of white people sitting outside a restaurant having a meal, and BLM activists just come up to them and start screaming in their face and berating them. Remember that one? There's only one incident. There's lots and lots of other types. Little old lady just getting stuff thrown at her. A little old white lady just getting stuff thrown at her and beaten down by BLM people. Oh, the endless examples of complete injustice and violence and madness in that BLM summer of love. The mostly peaceful, but very fiery summer of love. Remember that? That's a result. That is in part, at least in part, a result to all the efforts and career of someone like Jesse Jackson. So no, I shan't shed a tear for his passing. Jesse Jackson, give me a break. And yet, the classic, all the main corporate mainstream media is just the greatest thing. It's like how they fawn over the memory of Martin Luther King or any number of these people, you know, like Nelson Mandela. Don't worry about that. He was the head of a paramilitary organisation that blew people up, women and children. Forget that bit. All right. Anyway. Jesse Jackson, forget all the horrible things he actually said. Forget the hatred in his heart. He was just great. He was just great. And let's build statues to him or whatever. He was just the best thing ever. Yeah, all right. Yeah, right. Okay. The FT. Here we go. Jesse Jackson, greatest thing since sliced bread. Yeah, he's a great man. Look, he's holding an American flag there. He definitely didn't hate America. Definitely didn't want to undermine and rip apart the very fabric of civil society in America. No. He's a great man. You're right. Okay, The Express. Oh, it's a good paper. All right, what do they go with? What are they talking about? Labour's job taxes branded silent killer of aspiration as unemployment hits 5.2%, as if unemployment is at 5.2%. It's way, 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 way higher because there's millions of people here that aren't even particularly registered one way or another, aren't on the census and don't work. So actually unemployment is way higher than that, way higher. All right, but the headline is millions are crying out for reward of hard work. Again, that's dodgy English, but okay, all right. Millions are crying out for reward of hard work. Anyway, we get the idea what they're trying, what they're attempting to express on the Express. Yeah, I have heard it is quite difficult to, especially for younger people, to get a job. I can understand that. I mean, it's never easy. I mean, even 25 years ago, or whenever it was, when I finished uni, 20 plus years ago, coming out of uni, got an undergrad, right, but from a good uni, but it's only a humanities undergrad, and not much work experience, like worked in the kitchens of a Wetherspoons once or whatever for a summer. And like, so your CV is, there's not much on it. So you're just hoping, basically hoping that an employer will just give you a break. You're just hoping you can catch a break out there in the wider world. I get it. I lived through that. And it was easier back then as well. And it was hard. It was difficult. You had to graft. You have to try really hard and throw a lot of muck at that wall until some sticks. And nowadays it's even harder, apparently, by all accounts. So I've got sympathy for people that really, really do want to work, are desperate to work, and can't get a job, or find it difficult to get a job. All I can say is you've got to throw a lot of muck at the wall. When people say, oh, I've applied for 50 jobs this week. Yeah, apply for 250 then. I mean, it's harsh to say, it's a bit of tough love there. But get used to applying for loads and loads of jobs that you don't even hear back from. They don't even give you the courtesy of giving you a no. Yeah, get used to that, yeah. That's the dynamic of it now. You've got to fill out the same thing on application forms over and over and over and over again. Yeah, I've been there a few times. Throughout my adult life, not just straight after uni, but two or even three times, is it? During my adult life, I've found myself either got fired or I got made redundant. I got made redundant once. So haven't got a job to go straight into, right? Because that's usually how it is, right? You keep your job until you find another job, and then you just move straight into the other. But when there's an actual window of unemployment, I've had that a couple of times in my life, or is it three times even? And you find yourself, I found myself there, sort of spending all day, often, like it's a full-time job. Spend 7-8 hours a day just filling out application forms. Yeah, that's what it takes. You can't sort of get up at 11 and fill out two or three application forms and then shrug and spend the rest of the day watching TV and tell everyone you're working really hard to try and find a job. Now you've got to graft at it. Do dozens and dozens and dozens a day. Get a spreadsheet with all your information on it, your name and address and the address of your school and the uni and the addresses of your previous employers. Get it in a spreadsheet so you can cut and paste easily. Get used to control copy, control paste, and get quick at filling out application forms. I mean, I don't know. I have got sympathy for people that find it difficult to find a job. Okay. I just see in the chat, I don't usually look at the chat, I don't usually have it up, but it just is. I see someone in all capitals saying, what were you fired for, Bo? Gross incompetence. I once worked for State Street. Massive company, State Street, in Canary Wharf. It's a really quite well-paid job. But it was just above my pay grade. I think I've talked about this before. I'm sure I have talked about this before, either on the podcast or on State of Politics. State of Politics. My other channel with Nate. I worked for State Street, and the job I applied for was a bit higher than I really should have even applied for. I was sort of aiming a little too high. They wanted experience of stuff I hadn't really got experience of. I had a little bit, but not really enough. I went for a job that was like over my head, basically. It's basically that, but I got the job. I'm quite good at interview. Can usually turn on the old Dade charms at an interview. Give the impression that you know what you're talking about, right? Anyway, I got the job, and there was a probation period, 6 weeks or whatever. And during that 6 weeks, it became clear to everyone, including me, that I was a little over my head. The job was a bit more difficult than what I was capable of doing. There were certain skills, certain knowledge that you would need, which I didn't really have, barely had. Anyway, it was a marginal thing. It wasn't like I was thrown out like a dishonourable discharge. It was just at the end of that probation period, they were like, yeah, you know, you're taking in to your manager in the HR, and they're like, yeah, we're not going to go forward with the permanent contract. We're afraid. Well, it happens. It happens. I shouldn't have applied for that job, and they shouldn't have given it to me. Don't know if anyone's ever out there and they've found themselves in that situation. You sort of exaggerate things in interview, and then get the job, and it's like, ooh. Yeah, don't do that. That's a good, it was a life lesson, though. It's a long time ago now. I was in my late 20s, early 30s. A long time ago, 15 years ago, something like that, more. Yeah, don't do that. It doesn't work out well. It's like trying to speak a foreign language in a foreign country and you've only got like one or two sentences of it. And you spiel out your sentence and the people come back in just a ridiculously long spiel of sentence to sentence to sentence of their language and you've got, and you're like, I can't. Just be honest that you don't speak their language. All right, let's carry on with the news. A bit of an aside there. Okay, millions are crying out for work. All right, The Star. What nonsense they go with here. Something about Gordon Ramsay. Yeah, don't care. Don't care about Gordon Ramsay. I really, really don't care. The Metro. Ugh, Metro. Harry. Ugh. Go away. Just end. Just stop. Stop. Dear Metro, stop. Stop it. Disgusting. After Navalny frog toxin killing exposed, good English, Putin critic, I never touch a door handle. They're unlikely to do the exact same thing, aren't they? It's not paranoia, says a Russian who named Kremlin's nerve agent assassins. I know I'm on their death list. Oh, well, I mean, he may well be, I'm not saying they're not, but like, are they going to do the exact same thing again? Like it was like the Novichok door handle nerve agent thing. I mean, I think dying of nerve agent poisoning is, again, one of a horrific way to die as well. Can be, depending on what type it is. Some might be very, very quick. The ones that aren't very, very quick would be, it would be terrifying to think that they're trying to poison you with a slow working nerve agent. Oh God, that is terrifying. Yeah, but they're probably unlikely to do the same thing again. Yeah, to know you're actually on a Kremlin death list, like Smersh. Smersh, actually Smersh doesn't exist anymore. I've been reading a lot of James Bond books, the original Ian Fleming books recently. And in that, in a lot of the early ones, Bond is always up against Smersh, which is like the KGB's, like assassin squad. Or Smersh means like death to traitors. Doesn't exist anymore, formally. But there's newer versions of it, right? I imagine the people that were sent to kill Litvinenko and the Skripal and whoever, they work for the modern equivalent of Smersh. It would be scary to have to know that you're sort of on their list and that if they could, they would kill you. Wouldn't be a nice feeling, would it? All right, still, I mean, they'll probably not do the door handle thing again, but maybe they would. All right, The Mirror. The Mirror, for some reason, is like so left-wing at the moment that even Reform are too much for them, it seems. No laughing matter. Reform jokers are dangerous. So they're criticising Reform from the left. The Mirror. They love Jesse Jackson. Civil rights hero. He's a hero among men, Jesse Jackson. Definitely not consumed with racial bitterness and hatred. Definitely hasn't got a chip on his shoulder. He's a hero, Jesse Jackson, says The Mirror. And the Reform jokers are dangerous. It's no laughing matter. It's no laughing matter. Farage cabinet full of Tories who would hammer ordinary Brits again. Well, that's true, they probably would. They back tax cuts for the rich. So, good. Axing workers' rights, doubt it. And we'll target NHS again. Again, I doubt it. And even if they did, the NHS needs to be profoundly looked at on a conceptual level. So shut up, The Mirror. Filthy rag. disgusting excuse for journalism. Although, one thing I will say, it does kind of bug me. The fake, the phony smokes. Look, really? Is it that funny, Richard? Whatever was being said there, was it that funny? Oh, yeah, oh, look, they're laughing it up, having a good time. Whatever was said there, whatever it was, on stage, in front of a big audience and all the cameras and everything, whatever was said there wasn't a joke that was that funny. That's fake. That's phony as hell. Pretending you're barely laughing about something hilarious. Why do they do that? Why do they do that? Why a reform like this? Can't you be... I'd much rather you're dour and serious because you're talking about things that are deadly serious. But no, it's all like, let's have confetti while we announce Andrew Rosendahl or Nadine Dorries. We'll have pyrotechnics and sparklers and confetti, and we'll all stand up there laughing, fakely, phony laughing. That's the Reform brand, is it? That's Nigel's brand that he wants. So fake. Stop being fake. That's the thing I think most people, I think, anyway, I might be wrong. But most normal people, working class people, can I speak for working class people? I'm getting them anyway. I think most people, they just want a bit of sincerity and authenticity. And they don't want fake phonies. They don't want robot people. They don't want, like, policy robots. This is the party line. Da-da-da-da-da. Everything's good. Like, you don't want that. Can we just have normal people talking normally, being normal, having normal emotions about things? But that's what you get nearly always, isn't it? I mean, Nigel, to be fair to him, the hypno-toad himself, king of containment, Nigel, to give him some credit where it's due, he's actually not too bad for that. He's among the more authentic people. He's still completely phony, as far as I'm concerned. But still, in the scheme of things, if you look at someone like a real freak, like, I don't know, Ed Miliband, or Keir Starmer, or whoever, right, you look at people like that, like, real stiff shirts, the real, like, weirdos. Compared to them, Nigel is sort of loose and normal, and, right, and just an actual person. But even so, it's all still a bit fake, a bit phony. I mean, look at that. Come on, mate. Really? Who are you kidding? Put that picture up on the screen again, Harry. Look at that. Really? What a weirdo. Haven't you got to go over to Ukraine again, Richard? Bit high time you go over to Ukraine, isn't it? Tell me all about how being British is just to do with cricket and cups of tea again, Richard. Tell me all about that. Yeah? Do it mid-guffaw. Or you're guffawing. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because by the time everything comes to a head, a sort of Yugoslavian, South African, Zimbabwe-style nightmare, you'll be dead, won't you? So it doesn't matter to you. Doesn't matter what happens to future generations. You'll be gone, so... Don't worry about it. It's funny, if anything, isn't it? It's funny. These people. Absolute filth. Same as they're just Tories. They really have just rebranded the Tories with a slightly lighter colour blue. That's all it is. And then some reform tards dare to make the argument that there's no real difference between Rupert Lowe and Nigel Farage on policy. Nigel Farage was asked just the other day, literally, I think, yesterday or the day before, about Rupert Lowe. And Nigel just said, only like a day ago, or 2 days ago, he just said, yeah, as soon as I heard that Rupert Lowe was talking about mass remigration, I knew I had to get rid of him. We had to get rid of him as soon as possible, I think he said. Something like that, anyway, paraphrasing slightly. Because that's not what Nigel wants. He says that's wrong, that's morally wrong. So don't tell me that Rupert and Nigel are basically the same. They've got the same policy platform. They haven't at all. It's night and day. chalk and cheese. So don't make that argument to me anymore. It's nonsense. They're the same. Why jump on Rupert's bandwagon? It's basically the same. No, they're not. Not at all. Not even close. All right, the Telegraph, the Daily Telegraph. Reeves blocking defence cash boost. Again, why write like that? Reeves blocking defence cash boost. Come on. Prue Leith, she's like 85. Just retire, love. Just retire. Like, who do you... The absurdity. You're 85. You should be in a home. You should certainly be at home. Like Fashion Week or something. Just give it a rest. Give it a rest. The Times goes with a similar picture. These crazy old women, like Vivian Westwood, someone like that. Just, stop. Stop, please, please, for the love of God. Give it a rest. 4 times more women than men on weight jabs. Labour may drop youth wage pledge to boost jobs. 1 in 6 18 to 24-year-olds are out of work because firms consider them too costly to hire. Yeah, that's how leftist economic theory works, to destroy a profit. Something like that. Will force companies to pay 16-year-olds to 18, 24-year-olds more. And so the companies just go, okay, that's cool, yeah, yeah, well, we're not going to employ them then. Yeah, leftist economic theory. We're going to tax billionaires and millionaires more. And the billionaires and millionaires are like, oh yeah, that's cool, well, we won't live here then. So you get nothing. We're going to tax businesses way more. Oh, well, we're out of business now. So you don't get anything. Again, it's like, it never, ever works. It never works. I don't know how many times it has to be tried. I don't know how many times leftist economic theory needs to be tried. I mean, not even just like the experiments of like the Soviet Union or Maoist era China or North Korea or Cuba or Venezuela, whatever. I don't know how many times it has to be shown. Even if you look at Britain in the 60s and 70s when they tried to do price controls and wage controls and all sorts of things. Just complete disaster. Complete economic disaster. I don't know how many... And yet you've got someone like Rachel Reeves put up straight away, first day one, put up a picture of a communist or a socialist on a wall in number 11. Start bringing in policies that just destroy the economy. How many times do you have to go through it? And yet still you'll find some people on Twitter advocating capitalism's the problem. Is it? The concept of having the very concepts at the heart of capitalism. That's the problem, is it? No. Not really, no. Having sort of a profit motivation. That's a problem. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. All right, so there's the papers. We did a poll, didn't we? We had a poll. Can't remember exactly what we said in the poll. What did we say? Ooh, spicy. We said in the poll, was Jesse Jackson a force for good? Yes, I don't always want to just tee you up so you can knock it with a 90% plus out of the park. Like, it's obvious. Anyone that watches The Bo Show, Breakfast with Bo, would answer one way. I'll do that sometimes. But actually, probably most of the time, would like to have something a little bit where it might split opinion. Well, this is split opinion a bit, although you are still on side with what with my take. Still 100% success rate of that. So we asked, was Jesse Jackson a force for good? And 68% of you say no. Again, if it was an actual national referendum, that would be a firm mandate, wouldn't it? 68% of you say no. Oh, 24% of you say maybe, which is fair enough. And only 8% of you say yes, he was a force for good. So it's actually, in those terms, a stonking win, in fact. If I take the maybes as... only 8% of you say yes. Who are you? You're not welcome here. Get out. Go on. Off you go. You're not welcome. I don't mean that. I don't mean that. Don't go. Don't go. I didn't mean it. We can make this work. I still love you. I just get scared sometimes. Don't leave me. No, get out. Go on. No, go on. Who needs you? Beat it. Hit the bricks. Put an egg in your shoe and beat it. No, don't go. Don't go. Stay. Keep watching. Keep watching. All right. Oh, it's just ticked up. 69% of you now say no. All right. That's the poll. Should we have a look at the? Let's have a look at the actual web pages. Sorry, my mouse is playing up there. Okay, I've got it back now. All right, the websites. All right, let's have a look then. The BBC. Let's start with the BBC. Let's whip through a few of these. Firm assessing COVID vaccine harm replaced after cost spiral to £48 million. Okay, this is a relatively interesting story. I'm unvaccinated. Proud to say I never took that vax. I was immediately suspicious of the entire narrative, almost immediately. I remember before COVID ever hit our shores, whilst it was still only in China, in Wuhan, I think within about five days of like the story breaking, of it happening, I remember the news saying there's like loads of people in Wuhan are dead, like loads, like the mortality rate is 20% or whatever. And there's thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people in Wuhan have died of this terrible new disease. And I was like everyone else, I was like, oh, wow, that's terrible, that's scary, that's worrying. Like, oh, my God, what the hell? You know, people have talked about this for decades, that something like this, a modern 1919-level pandemic-type thing would happen. It's just going to, at some point, it will happen. There's been bird flu scares before, all that sort of thing. It's happening. It's going to happen. And when they were saying that about Wuhan, I was like, okay, that's worrying, that's terrible. I just do want to see... Either mass graves or loads of coffins lined up or you know, hundreds of grieving families. I just need to see actual evidence that, physical evidence that thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of people have died. I just need to see that. Never saw it. And from that moment on, I was like, is this real? They showed you a few coffins, like a dozen coffins or something. People getting buried in Wuhan. And I was like, no, but you're saying it's thousands though. Where's the... Just show me any evidence of that. Any evidence. It's like Bigfoot or aliens. I'm happy to go along and believe it. I just need a bit of evidence. I just need some real, real, proper, slam dunk, 100% undeniable evidence. And okay. Never came. Never got it. So I basically, from that point on, I was like... And the vaccine stuff. I remember there was one point in the vaccine thing. So you remember it was like a year or so later, or was it quite a few months later before the vaccine came out? And I remember it was a story about one of the British nuclear submarines and that every single person on board had to have the vaccine because, you know, like the military insisted on it. Like loads of organisations just insisted you have it, didn't they? Carl Benjamin never insisted that his employees have it because he's not mental. The Royal Navy insisted everyone have it and the army and everything. And so they had it. I think they'd even been double jabbed anyway, whatever it was. They'd had the vaccine. And then the entire submarine of people came down with COVID. This was like very early on in the thing. I was like, so it's not a vaccine then. So it doesn't work as a vaccine, whatever it is. So what is that people are being injected with then if it doesn't work? Because this is the idea of a breakthrough, right? That you get vaccinated for something, whatever, and then you still get the thing. Okay, that can happen. That totally can happen, given. But it's rare. It's very, very rare. It absolutely should not happen to an entire company or dozens or even hundreds of people on a single submarine or in a single building or whatever. So that vaccine isn't working as a vaccine. It's not a vaccine. So there's no way I'm injecting myself with that thing, whatever that is, that chemical, that bit of liquid, or I've got no idea what it actually is. And you can dream on that I'm having that injected into me. No way. When people like Nana Acuna go on GB News and talk about, we should go door to door and force people to take it. No, love. No, you're out of your mind. Yeah, you're going to have to physically, you're going to need two or three burly blokes to strap me to a gurney before and do it against my will, because I'll go down fighting. No. Not letting anyone inject that filth into me, whatever it was. Because it wasn't a vaccine, was it? What was it then? All right. Well, we've also had the COVID inquiry, which is really weird. It's obviously a whitewash, because most of it seems to be about not the lie of it all, not the weird vaccine, which wasn't a vaccine, not that. It's that Boris Johnson didn't lock us down quickly enough and hard enough. That's the angle. The absolute opposite angle of what's necessary. Now, you may think, Bo, you're being a bit extreme here. It wasn't like that. Well, in this article, it says there are thousands of people. What, 22,000? There you go. More than 22,000 claims related to COVID vaccines have been made so far. People whose health has been damaged. 22,000. And you bet your bottom dollar that's actually the tip of the iceberg in reality, but all right, whatever. 22,000. Of those already, 250-odd have actually already, like, gone to court and won. And, like, 30-odd million pounds has been paid out in compensation for damage the vaccine did. So, okay. A couple of tens of thousands of people would at least were wounded or harmed by that. At least 250 of those have won something in the order of £30 million in compensation. And the whole investigation into the harm the vaccine did has spiralled out of control. Right. But Boris didn't lock us down quick enough, though. What a crazy time. What a crazy time that was. I'll never do it again. I'll never wear that face nappy thing again. I don't care what looks I get, what snappy remarks I get from Karens and busybodies. No, I'm not wearing that mask ever, ever again. They bring in some, there's a new version of COVID and you have to have it before you can get on the train. Well, I'm not getting on the train then. You have to have it before you can go into Tesco's. Well, I'm not going to Tesco's then. Whatever happens, I will work around it. I'm not playing that game ever again. No. I'm ashamed at myself that I even wore the mask from time to time on a train or whatever. That I queued up one in, one out to go into Tesco's. A 90% empty Tesco's and you've got to queue up outside. One in, one out. No. I'm bowling straight in there, regardless of their stupid little security guard. Call the police then. I'm going to continue my life. I'm not wearing a mask in a park or something. Well, call the police then. Ring up the Home Office hotline. Dob me into them if you need to. I'm not playing that game. No. Absolute insanity. Can't believe it. It was mad. Oh, look, a black man in a football game got angry that one of the players allegedly used a racial slur against him. Cheers, Jesse Jackson. Cheers for giving us this world. All right. The ITV news, they're going with some various Epstein stuff. And that it's... yeah, there's a story. The Daily Mail. Lady Lawrence. Is that what she would be called? The Baroness Lawrence. Stephen Lawrence's mum. Claimed that the Daily Mail... like bugged her phone and stuff, and the Daily Mail was saying that's ridiculous, that's one of the most ridiculous things ever. Of course we didn't. So I've got any love for the Daily Mail, or they wouldn't stoop to such things, but Baroness Lawrence is again consumed with racial resentment. Thanks, Reverend Jesse Jackson. Oh look, a disgrace to football. Look, he's really upset that a racial slur was thrown his way, allegedly, in a football match. All right. I don't really care about it. the Daily Mail. The Alps turn deadly. They think the most important thing in the world today is that there is an avalanche in the Alps. I don't think it killed loads of people or anything. It's just, it was just caught on camera. A bit of snowfall. Yeah, avalanches are very, very, very common in mountainous regions. Kind of all the time. You ever have that? Where, do you ever see sometimes they go to like the Arctic or the Antarctic and they go to an ice shelf and a big chunk of ice, a massive slab of ice falls off the side of the ice shelf and they go, look, global warming. It's global warming, climate change. Like, no, that happens all the time. Every single spring, there will be millions of that happening. Millions. All right, Andrew, more pressure on Andrew. There's pressure on Andrew. Was there another story? Look, Ant out of Ant and Dec. He rushed home to be with his dying dog. Oh, I'm not being sarcastic. It's a real, oh. Look like a good boy. It's not really news, though, is it? As sad as it is, heart-wrenching as it genuinely is that news? Andrew just found out what William and Kate really think. He's totally finished. Yeah, in that story, it just says that when Wills, the current Prince of Wales, when he becomes king, he's going to basically force his uncle completely out. Completely, like, maybe even, like, say, you can't stay in the UK anymore. Go and live abroad. Like, kind of get lost. Whether that's true or not, I mean, it's just inside a scuttlebutt, but apparently Wills is much more disgusted with his uncle, much less likely to give him any sort of slack than King Charles will. Don't blame him, really, I suppose. Don't blame him. If he wants to try and salvage any credibility the monarchy's got left, I suppose I get it. Were there any other interesting stories? Zia Yusuf reveals reforms plan for net zero migration. Yeah, net zero migration isn't good enough. We don't want one in, one out. We don't want net zero. That's not good enough. I need net negative migration to the tune of millions. Again, people saying that Reform and Rupert have got the same platform, the same policies. No, they haven't. Rupert said millions must go. Reform are saying net zero. So your house has been filled with manure, filled up to the brim with manure, and Reform say, well, we're not going to pack any more manure into your home. Every shovel of manure you put out, we'll put one more in, so it stays exactly the same. No, that's not what we want. That's not good enough. Now you can keep your net zero migration. That locks in our demographic replacement through birth rates and things. I don't want net zero migration. Poke it. Give me Rupert. Aim high, vote low. Give me Rupert. Millions must leave. Millions. Nothing short of that is good enough. All right. The Sun. The Sun had one or two bits of mildly funny or interesting slop today. Andrew sex probe. Okay. This guy, if you drew a picture of him, you'd be arrested for racism, wouldn't you? Utter farce. Dangerous prisoner due to be deported escapes again a week after going on the run. Yeah, I was going to report on this story, or mention it rather, about a week ago, that this guy escaped. He basically escaped from jail and was on the run. They got him. They found him, though. And he's done it again. He escaped again. Yeah. Daniel Boke. He's a gang member and drill rapper, is he? But he's got great lyrical talent. But he's a great songwriter. He's a lyricist, is he? A genius lyricist. A drill rapper. Okay, anyway. Well, there's a couple other kind of interests. There's flooding. Look, there's flooding. That guy. Oh, Ian Watkins, one of the worst people. Terrible, terrible, insane, insanely evil. Andrew again. I'm doing. Oh yeah, look at this clip. This guy on an e-scooter. Oh, but face plant. He looks knocked out as well. He's not moving. It's a pretty bad spill. I quite often watch videos of people taking bad spills, you know, like fail videos. That looks like quite a bad one, to be honest. Like, he face plants and then doesn't move. That's just knocked out. He may have broken his nose, broken his teeth, cracked an orbital, mild brain damage. That's pretty bad. Oh, there you go. Oh, it wasn't just... Oh, yeah, this is the story. Okay. Drums of war. Iran threatens to send Trump's aircraft carrier to the bottom of the sea. It is heating up a bit, where Trump sent a second carrier group to the Persian Gulf. So there'll be the USS Abraham Lincoln and the USS Ford, Gerald R. Ford, the biggest aircraft carrier in the world. The amount of firepower you can launch off that deck is remarkable. And all the missile cruisers that go with the carrier group. Fearsome. A fearsome amount of ordnance and firepower can be unleashed from those floating platforms. But the Ayatollah says he'll send them to the bottom of the sea. Will you, mate? Will you? I doubt it. I doubt you will. But there you go. At the moment, they're in Geneva. Iranian and US delegations are meeting in Geneva, and it's being moderated by the Omanis. But it seems, a little bit worryingly, that the Ayatollah's not... Because ultimately, the policy is up to him, isn't it? It seems that he's not going to give in... It's a weird little hand there, isn't it? What a weird little hand. Anyway. Seems like he's not going to give in. One quote towards the end, he said that America's demands about their nuclear program, uranium enrichment program, was just... The Ayatollah was saying it's just impossible, or not impossible, I can't remember the exact word he said, it was just like unrealistic, or it's just not going to happen. Illogical, that was it. Today, Khomeini insisted deterrent weapons, i.e. things that might blow up and sink the US carrier groups, are necessary and obligatory, and blasted US demands that Iran abandon its nuclear program as illogical. If negotiations are to take place, predetermining their outcome is wrong and foolish, says the Ayatollah. That's the sort of thing they've always said, something like that, i.e. meaning, reading between the lines, what you can only grasp from that is that, no, we're not going to stop, we're not going to give in with the Iranian enrichment thing. It's sort of what's being asked of you at this stage, right? You've sort of got to, otherwise, it seems, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's all complete bluster from the US. Maybe it's all complete saber-rattling and they're not going to do anything. Maybe. I don't think so. You don't move two carrier groups to the region, usually, to do nothing. But the Ayatollah saying to even really ask us to stop doing the nuclear program is illogical. Doesn't look like he's going to budge, does it? That's sort of the sticking point for Trump and Bibi. Let's be honest. Don't say I'm not aware of what's going on really here. And Bibi. It's been Bibi's dream always to destroy that regime in Iran. And he's saying that their demands are illogical. And that any predetermined outcome is hoping for any sort of predetermined outcome. i.e. that they will capitulate, that they, the Iranians, will capitulate, is wrong and foolish. There you go. I don't think he's going to give in. I don't think the Americans and the Israelis are going to give in on their line that you've got to stop all that. And I don't think the Iranians are going to give in either. So it's a bit worrying. By the time the USS Gerald R. Ford gets to the region in like 3 weeks, a month, roughly, it's got to double the Cape, hasn't it? Around South Africa. It's got to get there. At that point, where Trump's lying in the sand, you know, Hegseth's lying in the sand, you've got until now. When that happens, all bets are off. Someone will have to blink at that point. whether it's the US and the Pentagon and the Chiefs and Hegseth or the Ayatollah. Someone's got a blink. We'll see. It's coming to a crunch, isn't it? One way or another. All right, let's have a quick jump across the pond. Oh, it's nearly nine. Rambled on a bit this morning. Hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you for watching The Glorious Band, The Chosen Few. Let's do a quick whip round then. The New York Slimes. Trump bets on diplomacy without diplomats. Trump's most trusted envoys, Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, are at the centre of negotiations, not the State Department and the National Security Council. That's an interesting thing to note, isn't it? Yeah. That is people like Witkoff and Kushner, not Rubio, or Rubio's number two, or any senior diplomats. It's Kushner and Witkoff. It's an interesting point, isn't it? All right. US and Iran makes good progress in Geneva talks, Tehran says. Is it good progress, though? I mean, what do you mean? We've been saying that for years. That we've been saying this for years. It's good progress. We've talked about a framework in principle. No, you're going to let the IAEA and the Americans see everything that's going on in Iran and their nuclear program. You're going to let that happen. Yes or no? No, so yes or no now, really. I doubt they're going to say yes. They might do, mightn't they? Like, go right up to the brinkmanship, go right up to the limit, sort of 3 weeks from now, and then go, yes, okay, we'll allow the IAEA to do absolutely anything they want and see anything everywhere. Is that going to happen? Is that enough anyway? I mean, Saddam, in the end, did that, didn't he? He was like, all right, I'm going to let you see everything. It still wasn't good enough, was it? It still didn't stop the powers that be from launching a war. Okay, there's not a great deal of time, so was there something in the French press? Teens on France's social media ban for under-15s. We're going back to the Stone Age. Yeah, it'd be good for you, though. It'd be good. It's healthy. That's healthy. Read a book. Live in the real world. Go outside and play a sport. Be normal. I mean, it's easy for me to say where I'm a Gen Xer. I think technically, very, very technically, I'm a millennial. I think I'm sort of the oldest possible millennial. Because I was born in 1981. So I think technically that makes me a millennial. However, all my childhood and all my formative years were Gen X years. I was a kid in the 80s and I was a teenager in the 90s. I'm a Gen Xer. Absolutely consider myself a Gen Xer. And I grew up in a world without mobile phones or the internet. And it was so much more wholesome. It really was. So much more wholesome. Normal. Having basically a normal childhood. Well, it's not. Well, I mean, what is normal? But you get what I mean. I wasn't bombarded by anything terrible. I never had a little screen in my hand that potentially, anyway, showed me gore and murder and hardcore porn and stuff. So I grew up normal. Very, very wholesome in comparison. And yeah, that would be good. That would be good, wouldn't it? If you didn't have a generation of scarred, psychologically scarred children because they've got a phone in their hand. All right. One little thing here in Space News. Artemis... The headline is, Artemis haters, can we have a moment, please? Because that's Artemis, isn't it? The Artemis 2 mission. Well, that's the SLS, the Space Launch System. And then the Artemis people will go on top there, just right at the very top. And this little thing says, it's taking too long, it costs too much, yet it's not being talked about enough. It's not historic enough, it's not safe enough. I'm talking about Artemis, or at least what a goodly portion of the space community is saying privately or online. Replete with sensationalist interviews and even vomit emojis. You can't please everyone, can you? Everyone's saying, it's so pathetic that humans haven't been back to the moon since the early 70s. How shameful and pathetic is that for us as a civilization? And then when you start to actually go back, they're going, oh, that's not good enough. That's lame. It's like, well, what do you want? Like, you can't have it both ways. Those people saying it's all fake anyway. It's not going anywhere. It's someone on Twitter said, it's not go. I put a picture of that on Twitter, and someone goes, it's not going anywhere anyway. What fool are you to think it's real? Mad. Mad. All right, on this day in history, because I like doing this, it's nearly 9 o'clock, so I like doing this. You seem to like this. What happened on this day, on the 18th of February, last few minutes, just to see the show out. On the 18th of February, in the year 1519, Hernan Cortes, leaves Cuba for the Yucatan Peninsula, Mexico, with 11 ships and 500 men. Yeah, fascinating bit of history. I've been threatening for ages to do a bit of content about the conquistadors. The story of Cortes and Moctezuma is amazing. It's almost an unbelievable story. There's certain things in history. I'm not saying it's not real. I believe the accounts, or at least mostly. But it almost beggars belief. Like, really, that happened? That set of events happened? Crazy. The amount of balls Cortes must have had to do the things he did. Like, when you're facing almost certain defeat and death and danger, you just double down again and again and again. Mad. Crazy. Anyone that's interested in history, that part of history, Mexican history, Mesoamerican history, watch documentaries about it or read a book about it. Absolutely fascinating. I'm even more fascinated by Pizarro. When I do a bit of content about the conquistadors, I think I'm going to do one on Pizarro. And arguably, even crazier stories of, like, adventure against the odds. Talk about deep behind enemy lines. There's a whole continent and an ocean between you and home. Like, could you get deeper behind enemy lines than that? Risking everything over and over and over and over and over again, insanely. And ultimately, not getting all wiped out to a man. Incredible. Peru, all that stuff. Okay, there's actually many conquistadors. All right, on this day in 1678, John Bunyan's Christian novel, The Pilgrim's Progress, is published in London by Nathaniel Ponder. Okay, interesting. The Pilgrim's Progress. Should read it. I'm not sure if I ever have. I think I picked it up a couple of times. I think I've picked it up a couple of times years ago. Never got into it. I don't think I ever finished it. I'm pretty sure I didn't. Maybe I should. Maybe find an audiobook version of it and listen to it one day. All right, in 1685, Fort St. Louis, is established by a Frenchman at Matagorda Bay, forming the basis of France's claim to Texas. Yes, you heard me right. France tried to claim the bit of land that nowadays is called Texas once upon a time. There you go. The Spanish controlled it for a while, didn't they? And then the Mexicans, and finally the United States. All right, on this day in 1885, Mark Twain publishes The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn in the US. Definitely read that. Almost a rite of passage, really. Got to read Huckleberry Finn. Classic Americana, isn't it? Classic stuff. All right, on this day in 1917, two major strikes of the Russian... first major strike of the Russian February Revolution starts at the giant Putilov factory in Petrograd. Petrograd is Leningrad, St. Petersburg. It's all the same place. Yeah, 1917, February Revolution, not to be confused with the October Revolution, if anyone doesn't know. In 1917, in Russia, there were two revolutions, one in February or March, depending which calendar you go by, and then one in October. Or is it November if you go by the other Russian, the other calendar? But it's the October Revolution. It's the February and the October Revolution. Let's not get mixed up with different calendars. Yeah, in the February one, you know, it gets rid of the Tsar, gets rid of the monarchy, but it's not the Bolshevik Revolution. It brings in a provisional government, Kerensky's provisional government, which was, you know, a load of liberals and socialists and communists. You know, the Bolsheviks were involved, Bolsheviks, Mensheviks, loads of different socialists. Loads of different liberals, different types of liberals as well, all together under one provisional government. And they stay in the war, World War One, crazily. And then most of the year goes by, and it's not till October when Lenin and the Bolsheviks are like, this isn't working. We're going to do another revolution here and take over just entirely for ourselves. We don't want to work with liberals and Kerensky and Mensheviks anymore. We're going to take the whole kit and caboodle for ourselves. So anyway, on this day in 1917, the February Revolution basically starts. One of the days when it starts. Right, on this day in 2014, Ukrainian Revolution begins as protesters, riot police and unknown shooters take part in violent events in the capital, Kiev, culminating after 5 days in the ousting, that should be the ousting, of President Viktor Yanukovych. There you go. They don't talk about that much anymore, do they, in the news? It's purely Mr. Putin's aggression. Don't worry about, like, the many, many years that led up to the first military incursions from Russia into the Donbass. Don't worry about any of that. Don't worry about what that was about or how it was orchestrated. It's just Russian aggression. It's not really the story, is it? That's not usually how history goes. I'm talking about World War I, it's just German aggression, was it? Was it? Or Japan at Pearl Harbor. It was simply Japanese aggression out of clear blue sky. They weren't provoked in any way. There's nothing. It was just for no reason. Not really how things work, is it? Russian aggression in this instance, just for no reason. Just Putin's just a madman. All right. Anyway, pardon me. That's the show. Let's do the super chats and the rumble rants. We've got one rumble rant here. From Pat J. Reed. I don't know if that's how you want it read, but Pat J. Reed says, some good news from the USA that you won't find in the newspapers. Okay, I'm listening. Like Fraser Crane, I'm listening. Alabama has joined Florida to become the second US state to enact the death penalty for raping children. Good. Alabama. Yeah, good. I've got no problem with that. I'm pro-death penalty for the most egregious crimes. It would have to be a slam-dunk case of guilt. I wouldn't want to execute an innocent person wrongly, of course. But with DNA and various things, we can be 100% certain very often, can't we? It's not the 1960s anymore. For murder or rape and things. Yeah, your life should be forfeit, I believe. You go, why should the state pay for you forever? Keep feeding you and stuff. All right, that's just me. The moral argument that it's simply wrong to ever take a life. No. No, justice demands it, in fact, I think sometimes. Actual justice. All right. For the YouTube super chats. Global Church History says, thanks, by the way, Global Church History, you super chat every day. Really appreciate it. Today, in the year 364 AD, Emperor Jovian, you said St. Jovian, the Emperor St. Jovian dies after restoring Christianity after Julian the Apostate, that would be. Today, 440, I guess in the year 440, are you talking? Mesrop Magthots, Armenian and Georgian scripts maker, died. Okay, I'm not sure who that is. I've not heard of that person, I'm afraid. But the Julian the Apostate thing and Jovian is very, very interesting. Brilliant bit of history. Brilliant, fascinating bit of history. Julian the Apostate. Anyway, read about it on your own time. I haven't got time to get into it here, but could talk about that for ages. In fact, probably should do an epoch on Julian the Apostate at some point. Fascinating bit of history. All right, like after the age of Constantine, isn't it? Yeah, it is, yeah, the generation or two after Constantine. Okay, Tori K Music says, morning, Bo. Please shout out to your band of sisters too, Tori and Ruby. Hi, Tori and Ruby. Your biggest Brummy fans, Brummy. Love the show and state of politics. State of politics. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Appreciate the money. Appreciate the segment. The glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Sorry, and Ruby. Cheers, gals. Appreciate it. Up the Brummie. Very nice American. That was an attempt at a Birmingham accent. Okay. Markers 588 says, always oppose and repudiate these subversive leftist race grifters, all of them. Yes, yes. We shouldn't tolerate them. They should be called out for what they are. Filth. Global Church History again says, why didn't Jackson's affair disqualify his ministry? Yeah, he'd had loads of things. He did loads of things that were pretty bad and egregious. And they just get completely ignored. Again, like Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela or any number of these people. Like those BLM women that just embezzled all the money. Most people don't ever talk about it. The mainstream media that championed them for years just never ever talk about it. Yeah. Someone like the Reverend Jesse Jackson can sort of do what he wants within reason and they'll just completely ignore it. It's mad, isn't it? It's mad. Big Owl, or Big AI, it must be Big Owl 100, says, long live the Bo Show. I've not missed an episode thus far. Brilliant. Chad. Thoughts on the Hammers season so far, Mr. Dade? I haven't been keeping up with it, to be perfectly honest. I can't even remember where they are in the league. I remember in the first little bit of the season, they weren't doing very well. I haven't even looked at where they are in the league for like weeks and weeks. So I'm sorry. I should do, shouldn't I? I pay less and less attention to football as I get older. I know they didn't have a very good start to the season, but I don't even know where they are at the minute. That's got to be over a month, 6 weeks or so before I even last even looked where they were. So I'm sorry, I can't really comment on that particularly. All right. I'm barely a fan anymore, right? If you don't really look what their results are on a weekly basis, are you even much of a fan anymore? Still, nominally, I'm a West Ham fan. All right. We've got quite a few more here, so I'll quickly whip through them a bit. Luke Stewart, 6155, says, good day, Bo. It's been interesting listening to people talk about since COVID, there's been a new massive... Since COVID, there's been a new massive decrease in people wanting to get any type of vaccine. I will admit I forgot to get a flu shot. Yeah, I'm not actually against vaccines as a concept, right? It's like I'm not against unions as a concept. It's just the reality of it is often questionable. Like there's some vaccines that you really should get. All little children should get. It would be crazy not to, really. But this one for COVID, though. This one for COVID. No. Field Marshal Dawn Browning. Whoop, just doesn't say anything, but gives 10 Australian bucks. Thank you, Dawn. Appreciate that. LJNV. I don't know if that's how you want it read, but LJNV says, aim high, vote low. Millions must go. New slogan. That's great, actually. Yeah, I've never said it in exactly or heard it in exactly that cadence, that in one go. Aim high, vote low, millions must go. That would be a good chant on the streets. Yeah, love it. Absolutely. And absolutely agree. Luke Stewart again says, why does this feel like everything that happened with Venezuela? I've got money that the Lila Tola will be in a Nike tracksuit soon. I don't know who Ila Tola is. Sorry. I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to there. Are you referring to Venezuela itself or to something else that's like Venezuela? I'm terribly sorry. But I don't quite understand exactly what you're saying or asking there. Okay. Mr. Dicky Bingo, not Dinky, Mr. Dicky Bingo says, anyone using the term net zero is a wrong'un. Yeah. Yeah, totally. A right royal wrong'un. LJMV again says, Did you also check out Asher Logos? No, I didn't actually, but I had a word with a couple of my friends who are aware of him. I did mention it to a couple of my mates. I'm like, have you ever heard of Asher Logos? Sorry, Asher Logos. And I got mixed reviews from them about him, about his content. I still mean to. When I get a free bit of time, I'll have a look. But I'll have a look. But some of the feedback I got didn't sound great. I'm interested in firm history, right? I'm not interested, and I'm not accusing him of this because I haven't watched any. So, but I'm not particularly interested in pseudo history, right? A little bit of Graham Hancock from time to time, but I'm not really interested in Woo. I'm interested in actual accounts of proper accounts of history. I'm not accusing Asher Logos of anything short of that, because I don't know, I haven't read any, but from a couple of things I've heard. I'll give him a whirl myself and make up my own mind. Well, I can't say fairer than that, can I? All right. I won't promise it in the next day or so, though. I'm quite busy. But Asher Logos, it's on my radar. It's on my radar. All right. Anglo Star just says, restore Britain, tell your friends, tell your family, onwards and upwards, lads. Yes, boom, yes. Yeah. Make it happen, IRL. In the pub, at barbecues, round the table. Talk about Rupert and restore. And that we want our country back. And we've been invaded and they need to go home. Talk about it with people. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. That's what they're counting on. That you'll be afraid that someone might call you a bigot or something. Some Karen at a barbecue will tut. Yeah, we've got to get over that. Yeah. Tell your friends, tell your family, onwards and upwards. Boom. Let's do this. We got this. F Google. That's not exactly how it's spelt, but that's what I'll say. F Google says, I admire your quiet indignation. Oh, cheers. Yeah. Yeah, I am indignant. Yeah. Indignant. In fact, that's quite kind. Now, I'm not going quietly into the dark. No, I'm not just going to give in. No, I'm not a doomer. I'm not an accelerationist. No, I haven't given up. Yeah, I'm indignant about it. Yes. Well spotted. I don't hide it very well then, do I? Well, I'm making any attempt to hide it. Why should I? Why should we? Why should we? Why should you? Don't. I've taken the absolute mickey out of us for decades. Enough. Enough. All right, Luke Stewart says, I was talking about the Iranian leader. Oh, okay, you've responded to where I said, okay, great, cool. Real-time super chats, where I said I didn't understand what you were talking about. He's now said, I was talking about the Iranian leader. Right, I couldn't spell the name right. I see. Sorry, and do you think he's going to be upwoken by Delta Force? I mean, okay, I get what you're saying now. Is he going to be in a Nike tracksuit? Like they put Maduro in a Nike tracksuit, didn't they? Yeah, okay, I get exactly what you're saying now. Okay, I don't know. Predicting the future is very difficult, and you're very, very often, nearly always wrong. However, I would say, I doubt they'll do a Maduro-style thing to the Ayatollah. I doubt it. I think, not that I really know for sure, but I would have thought that technically, physically, it would be much more difficult. They're just physically, technically getting a Delta Force team to the right place in the right moment, nabbing him and bouncing out again with like zero problems. That would be much more difficult in a place like Iran. Look at it on the map. So much bigger and everything. So I doubt they'll do a Delta Force style, Maduro style, capture, grab, kidnap thing to the Ayatollah. I doubt that. But will they do various other military intervention style shenanigans with them? If I had to make a prediction, it's looking increasingly likely to me. I hope not, let's be clear. I'm not a hawk on this one. Some places around the world I'm a hawk. Blowing up drug boats in the Gulf of Mexico and a few people might die. Yeah, do it. Yeah. 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 Attacking Mexican cartels. Yeah. Yeah. Blow them to bits. So I'm not a dove either. But I'm not a hawk. I'm not not by definition or by default a hawk. I would like if there was no conflict in Iran. I think that would be better if the, you know, if I could click my fingers, if I could just press a button and that regime was gone, and they had some form of democracy and all the economic things that have been put on Iran were removed so their economy can come back. No one has to be blown up. No one has to starve to death. No one has to live in penury and poverty anymore there. And they have a free society again. And no kinetic weapons need to be fired. If I could press a button and that happened, I would. But if you're asking me, which isn't exactly what you're asking me, but nonetheless, whether America and, you know, others, any sort of coalition for the willing or whatever, are going to start doing stuff in Iran, it's looking increasingly more likely. Two carrier groups to the region and red lines being drawn in the sand, time-wise, by Hegseth and the chiefs of staff and Trump. And now the ball is basically in the Ayatollah's court to completely give in. And he doesn't look like he's going to do it. And I don't think he could, politically, ideologically, I don't think he could bring himself to give in. So, yeah, it increasingly looks bad on that front. Once again, as you asked there about the Ayatollah being frog marched out by Delta Force in a Nike tracksuit, I don't see that happening. Maybe though, but I doubt it. All right, that was the last super chat. That has been the show. We are now 21 minutes past a bumper episode this morning. I waffled on quite a lot this morning, didn't I? It's now 21 minutes past 9 in the AM Greenwich Mean Time on Wednesday, the 18th of February in the year of our Lord 2026. Thanks for watching. You've been the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for watching. Without you, it really, really, really isn't a thing. So I appreciate it. Try and make the best of the day ahead. I've only got it once. Carpe diem, seize the day. Try and make it count if you can. All right, until tomorrow morning then. Take care.